Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another fantastic night of Fandom Access. I am your ever-faithful host, AJ. Greetings and salutations, and look, everybody is here already, so on with the show. That's it, Vlog Talk Radio. Let me bring people in. Good evening.
Hi.
Is this Gary?
Yes. AJ, how you doing, man?
Good. How you doing?
Good.
And let's see. Let me bring everybody else in.
Okay, I was muted.
Hello.
I was talking, but I was muted. Welcome, Gary.
Blog Talk was being a pain in the butt.
Sorry. Well, welcome, everybody.
Hi.
Hello.
Everybody. Hello, everybody. Hey, Karen.
It's Karen.
Nice to be here.
Oh,
right.
Yes.
We have a big crew on with us tonight.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe you ought to introduce everybody.
Hi. Okay. We have Ellen Adair and Roslyn Seal.
Hello.
Great.
Hi.
Welcome,
thanks
guys.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks
Hello.
For having us.
Thanks for having us. Jinx.
Yeah. Okay, and so who do you guys play in Joyland?
I can go first. I'm Roslyn.
Go ahead, Roslyn.
So I'm Roslyn, and I play Tyra Bass, and I'm a teacher, a principal in the school system, New York City school system. And I am also the wife of a prominent preacher, and he's also a former NBA star.
If only.
Ellen?
So my name's Ellen Adair, and I play Karen Lapidus. And she is, I guess you would call her, a housewife. She has a teenage daughter who is, I guess, has some, I don't know, mental difficulties. at least that's Karen's point of view on it. And a husband who sort of has a roving eye, more than that, I guess. She's just sort of trying to hold it together. She's a very smart woman and kind of put into this position of being a wife and a mother. Her father sort of started from humble roots, but is now a big owner of a chain of department stores and kind of mover in the political arena. And Karen, unfortunately, is just sort of trapped in society viewing her as a wife and a mother.
Well, Gary, since we've only seen one episode, do you want to quickly, for the people that are listening to this that haven't seen it, do you want to give a quick rundown of the basics?
Maybe we lost Gary for a second there.
Maybe.
Back
in. He just messaged. He got knocked out.
He got kicked out.
Have to let him back in, AJ.
Who needs
everybody's
the writer?
Everybody's on. Let me reload the page. There he is.
I heard that, you know. Yeah, get rid of the writer.
Let's change
the script. The script sucks. Come on. No one talks like that. You know what I think happened? It's not anyone's fault. My cat and dog were fighting and chasing each other, so I was trying to keep peace. The glamour of the entertainment business.
Well, that would be your cat and dog's fault then.
Yes, they were fighting peace, and sometimes they just stink at each other. But yes, here I am in Joyland, as everyone knows, is set in the 1960s. Fabulous, iconic, tumultuous 1960s, starting in July 1964 in Brooklyn and the Catskills Bungalow Colony. And for those who don't know or don't remember, perhaps, what a bungalow colony was, it was a summer retreat for many working class and middle class New Yorkers, mainly Jewish, escaping hot times summer in the city, back before you had air conditioning, back before you had a lot of money to go anywhere, before things were accessible, like Miami Beach, which my people seem to like. And bungalows were maybe like $300 for a summer. Once upon a time, right?
Did you go as a young person, Gary? Did your family go to a place like that?
Yes, because we were working class, and that was about all we could afford. And it was very, it was, as we say in episode in the first episode, it's a place where for 2 months you could feel rich. You could feel like a king, you know, and that was something very special mm-hmm. when you lived in crowded apartment buildings in concrete and you didn't have a lot of money and you didn't have a lot of amenities. And there you were, you know, the women, because as Karen says, even though she's a wealthy housewife, but she is a housewife, and it was the women and the children during the week. And then the men would come up Friday nights, and they would barely, they just don't blow kisses at their wives, ignore the children, get into their bathing suits, and sit and light up cigars and cigarettes and start playing pinochle and gin rummy and drinking beer. And then the fun and excitement and certain things that I was not aware of when I was a teenager would go on around me.
So, I mean, obviously, I'm guessing were a lot, but what were some of the difficulties in filming this during COVID and everything? Because obviously it's all on Zoom, so. Or something like Zoom, I'm assuming Zoom.
And I guess it was your intent to shoot live, right? Like, you didn't intend to make a Zoom. This is a creature.
Well,
this is a.
We had developed it as a regular live television series, and we hope that the point is to showcase this and to show what the story is like and how to convey the story, and certainly with actors like Rosalind and Ellen, our incredible cast, which, you know, goes from London to Los Angeles. But we were obviously restrained. So we took Zoom and tried to make it more than just Zoom and tried to produce it a little bit and add music and some sound effects and virtual backgrounds. And now Ellen and Rosalind could talk about the challenges of doing that, which they did wonderfully, but there's a challenge to it.
Yeah, there absolutely is, at least from my perspective. And I think that the biggest challenge is that in order to sort of get something that is, I think, the most appealing for the viewer to watch, the actors really need to keep their eye level up to their computer's camera. But because of that, you can't really keep your eye on your scene partner. And so for me, you know, acting is really about my scene partner. So we have rehearsal, and so we're sort of able to work with each other. But definitely there are times where I'm like, I think Tim is probably giving me this kind of a look, so I should say my next line, but I can't actually see him. So yeah, I think that's the biggest challenge. But fortunately, you know, with this sort of editorial assistance, the producing that they're doing for the taping that we do on Zoom, everything gets sewn up together very nicely.
Yeah, so, I completely agree. Yeah.
So I was going to ask you, Rosalind, and I guess Ellen, so I don't know what your other acting experience is. We cover a lot of science fiction on this program, and so we've talked a lot of actors about having to do CGI, and I wonder if what you guys are describing is similar to maybe working on green screen, if you've done that, or was this even like harder? And is your own little face looking at you on Zoom while you're trying to act like it does when I'm in a meeting?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't done any CGI work, but I've done a lot of commercials and or things where there aren't elements that are there, or you're saying lines to a person that's not there, which can happen in even sometimes in like close-up shots for something, you know, they're not calling the other actor for whatever reason, and you're just acting to, you know, a tennis ball or something, or the director will have, or the director will have his hand out or something like that. So I did try to treat it in that way. You know, how do you stay true to a situation when you can't really see your scene partner? Like, I can kind of see them, but not really. And then you try to not get distracted by the glints of your face in the box because you don't want to look at yourself. You're just trying to focus in on the actual camera of the computer.
I just hide self-view so that I don't have to look at myself. that's an option on Zoom that has made it slightly more bearable for me just in general in life, not just for acting on Zoom. But, yeah, I think, you know, I have some experience, I guess, working with CGI elements, and I think that this is maybe a little – it's a little bit more challenging than anything that I have worked with before, because I feel like usually at least the other actor is there. I haven't, like, worked with a CGI character. However, there are the times where you have been doing the scene and then it comes time for your close-up and they're like, no, actually, you need to look at this point on the map box. So, you know, not getting to look at your scene partner is always a part of doing any kind of on-camera acting. But I still think it's one of the harder parts of it.
Well, it's definitely a credit to all the actors because you know, a lot of the scenes, I could really, you know, the emphasis on things and how things went together really felt natural, even though obviously you guys are on Zoom. Like, especially some of the scenes between Karen and Marty, I could actually feel the flirtatious nature between them, even though you guys, you know, clearly weren't in the same room, obviously. But it came across in the acting. So, I mean, it's a credit to the whole cast to be able to do something like this when you're basically talking to yourself in a computer screen.
Well, that's really kind of you. I appreciate that so much. Yeah, I just, you know, I feel like the other thing about on-camera acting is obviously that you're always using the frame and you're trying to use, it's a visual medium, so you're trying to use like gesture and kind of depth of field and stuff like that in order to tell the story. And so that obviously is very much still in play on Zoom. And I was mindful of, you know, hoping to try to use those elements to tell the story. So I'm really glad that it came across, at least for you.
You know, now that AJ mentions that, I definitely noticed that Karen's got this little, like, hair flip kind of thing she does when she's talking to Marty, that you've got your, like, hand and your hair a little bit there in this, in the bottom of the frame. I might not have noticed that if it was like a full scene, a full body shot of the two of you or whatever. Tyra, I don't know. Tyra doesn't get a chance to flirt, really, at least not in this episode. So
no, I do not.
Yeah, but Tyra owned the scene with Julian. She told him who wears the pants in the family, so.
Thank you. No, that's like, I mean, I definitely, like, in my own family, it's like the men knew their place. You know, like, they definitely knew their place.
I think maybe in Gary's family, too, because Gary seems to have written really almost a whole cast of women who seem to own the pants in the family.
All of these women. Early on. The three sisters, yes.
How many? Three sisters?
Yes, three sisters. Oh. Well, you know, the thing about, it's interesting you say that, because Zoom is its own thing. It started, you know, apart from being for me conferences. It, first for entertainment, it was used primarily for theater, and then it started, which is how I found it, and I know Rosalind, and then it evolved, and it's not really theater because it's filmic, but it's certainly not film, you know, film, movie, TV, and it's got an element with the voiceover of an audio drama. So, but what it does have is an intimacy. And when you talk about not noticing things that you might have lost in a wider shot, you are seeing things a lot closer up, which if you're doing a TV show, and television, as we all know, is a very intimate medium. And you trust people to come into your, most of the times, your bedroom at night and be there with you. And so there's something about the American viewer and television that has this intimacy, and Zoom is not, obviously we prefer a real production, can work if you work on it.
It'd be interesting to see, like, when we come out of this, how that influences content going forward. Like, are the lessons of Zoom would be taken to TV, or, you know, will Zoom sort of change the way, like, made-for-YouTube things are going to happen? Or I know there was a whole movie, early in the pandemic, there was a whole horror movie shot on Zoom, and I didn't see it. The clips I've seen, they chose to sort of shoot in their own houses, where you guys have chosen, like, a standard, like, Zoom backdrop, which I thought was a really interesting way to show, like, two characters being in the same room together, and that you chose to never be together. I'm not sure if that's because of your far-flung cast or because, particularly in New York City, nobody was going inside anybody's house for a long time. But that was kind of cool to see that same piece of scenery dropped in behind multiple people who were not together to tie it all together.
Yes, we did, and the cast was wonderful soldiers in putting up with that, and everyone learning how to do the virtual background. And we researched the photos very carefully because we were very anal about that. So, for example, when we had, you know, interior Karen Lapidus's home, we found a living room that would be more high class. And, Tyra would be more middle class. Marty and Deb was working class. And so we had to be, you know, we really tried to be realistic. And, oh, no, that's not a cop car, you know, from the 60s. Everything was 1964, even to down to the point where we had a debate, is that the same police siren in the 1960s? And, you know, none of us had problems with the police in the 1960s. Well, I guess it's the same. It's not like the European man, and like the Gestapo is coming. We really tried to, you know, the shots of the bungalow colonies, we really tried to be as accurate as we possibly could. But you're right, our point is finding a new way to develop TV. And, all right, now I'm on a primarily sci-fi pod, so when I say Kobayashi Maru, people are all going to understand what I'm saying, right?
Yep.
Thank you. Kobayashi Maru is our mantra. I've been educating the cast about, you know, Trekkie terms to some success. And why not change the rules? Why do you have to say that you must spend $1 million on a television pilot and fly people in when you know so many TV pilots get shelved, never picked up? Why do you have to spend all that money? Why do you have to fly people around and disrupt everyone's schedule? Why can't you just present it in a more simplistic context? If the story is good, it doesn't need all the bells and whistles at this stage. If you have actors like Ellen and Roslyn and our cast and a wonderful director, Damon Seraphin, he's an award-winning Broadway performer, and Helen Hayes nominee, you can get the story, and it can work. You could see who these people are and get a sense of the times, which we know the 1960s, so much of today started in the 1960s and unfortunately remains unresolved. Our first episode opens in on the heels of protests which turned into riots in New York City because a cop shot an unarmed African-American teenager. Hello? Really?
Yeah.
And we were trying to show how things have not all changed, and some things, of course, have changed. Women, we go into, you know, the rise of women's rights. Karen is a very bright woman whose father doesn't take her seriously. And, you know, she doesn't have a job. She wants to be involved in the business, and he just, really, come on, honey. And Tyra is different. Tyra is the first African-American assistant principal in the New York City school system, in a high school. And we researched that. We made sure that was true. But Tyra's rare. Marty's wife, Deb, is in episode 2 going to get a job? And he's going to say, Sandy, you don't need the job. Because back then, women, many of their roles were, you know, do you want cream and sugar in your coffee, sir? And we have our character, Aaron, who's 14 and struggling, awakening his sexual identity, which is not going to be straight. You know, really, good luck with that, kid. You're 14 years old in Brooklyn in 1964, and you're gay? You know, that's the whole thing. So we try to, and there's also the class struggle of the 60s, which is often not depicted, because in the Joyland, it's a lot of, you know, the little girls and the little guys up against the establishment. Julian, Tyra's husband, he's fighting for civil rights, but he's also trying to be accepted by the establishment. Marty Dent wants an ABA franchise, but no one's going to take him seriously because he hangs wallpaper. And he goes, you know, you remember in episode 1, the woman won't let him use the bathroom. And it was because he had blue-collar cooties. I grew up working class, and my father would tell me that he would be on a job, he's a hung wallpaper, and they wouldn't let him use the bathroom. And it wasn't because he was a Jew, because usually he was in Jewish homes. They just thought, well, you're less than us. And that's not often shown in those days. And I think it's really important because it's the people who had the power. And that's what the 60s really, a lot of it was giving up power, primarily by, you know, white men who had a stranglehold on them.
Yeah, you know what? If I can just chime in, you made me think of something really interesting, which is kind of the story that you've written with Julian and Tyra. And, you know, I don't know if you or Roz want to speak to it, but her being a teacher, I feel like a lot of the depictions I see in popular culture of the minister's wife, and particularly like the black minister, like civil rights crusading, like you've modeled us a little bit on an MLK type character. We often see the wife as like this, just exists to be a supporter of the husband. Like, you know, I don't see many ministers' wives in a lot of culture as independent as she is and maintaining her own career rather than like subjugating that to the man getting ahead. And I'm interested to see like where that's going to go. There are these two like charismatic guys. And then secondly, you made me think of how Marty comes to them, like Marty's involvement with them. It's kind of interesting to me also. I don't know where that'll go. There's so much going on. Just like any pilot episode, there was so much going on in this first hour that, you know, in the last, it's not until like the last 15 minutes that some of that starts to come together.
Yeah.
So,
well,
but
your
normal.
Questions will begin to get answered.
Oh, see,
yes.
There's no spoilers coming out of them.
No. You know, if you twist, every time I go do an interview, I get in trouble with the director. Damone says, why? And Russell, the co-creator, he says, you shouldn't be saying all that. Well, you know, haha, they're not on the call. So,
don't be saying that, Gary.
Said.
Don't give away your secrets.
No, I'm serious. But, yeah, they do come together and, for example, you're going to see in episode 2, as an assistant principal in 1964, Tyra is going to be caught up in the first wave of school desegregation busing. And that's really tumultuous. And she's going to be pitted against one of the other characters who's going to be on the other side. So you're going to see what that was like for people. And then I think we did an interview today, and Jamil Dobson, who plays Julian Bass, said what brought him to the script, to the story, is that there's so many unusual pairings, and it's Jamal, you know, Julian and Marty. You wouldn't think, I mean, they were teammates in basketball.
Yeah.
That brought them together, as sports often does. But you even see the tenderness of Red Harrison with Aaron and Mr. Will, who refers to him as his little Caucasian. And you're going to see those relationships develop. And I think with that, as you can see, the script does not preach, and this is purely entertainment, but we do want people to think and to see that no matter what, you can come together. Even if it doesn't make sense, you can find a bond. And I think that's what we'd like in these times, to show some hope, because the 60s were about hope. It was, you know, 1961, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what you can do for your country. And there was, as much as things went south, a lot of things did not. And laws were passed that were long overdue, and rules were broken, and authority questioned as it should have been.
Yeah, one of the things that I really love about the series is sort of like the panoply of different sort of walks of life that are depicted, and yet the ways in which they sort of braid together and come together. And I think it was maybe one of our last rehearsals, Damone was sort of asking the cast what they thought the general story was, and I don't remember, Tim, who plays Marty, had an answer that I like really touched me profoundly, and I don't remember exactly what his words were, unfortunately, but he was basically like, everybody in this script is just trying to make order out of their chaotic life. And so I feel like that's, you know, given the kind of the tumult that is the background of the painting of this entire story, that everybody is trying to find their own way through it, and the ways in which they find the other characters in maybe unexpected ways is really beautiful.
Do you, I was just curious, do you have, like, any scenes together coming up? Or, because we really haven't seen a whole lot yet to know, you know, how that's going to go, but do you two get to work together in that sense?
I don't know,
I don't have
Gary.
That information.
I don't know, but I'll ask.
Eventually, yes.
Eventually, okay,
people,
that works.
You know, going to be some politics bringing people together.
All right.
Like it does all the time, am I right?
Yeah.
Great
Politics are to bring people together.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's an interesting. There's an apocryphal story if I have time to tell it, because we sometimes forget what politics used to be like. In the fall of 1963, it's hard to believe, but Barry Goldwater, arch conservative, and John Kennedy were very good friends, because back then you could be friends across the aisle. And they were planning, obviously John Kennedy was going to run for re-election and get the nomination, and Goldwater had a good chance of getting the Republican nomination, as he eventually did. And what they were thinking of doing was making campaign trips together on the same plane and going to spots across the country and giving a speech and then debating to a degree an issue and exchanging. And you think, wow. You know, they were on almost every issue, they were apart. I mean, they were both very anti-communist, but with different degrees. You know, that can never happen now. And you think how that got lost. It's very sad to be able to talk. And we just, you know, and I think what we try to do in Joyland is show, as Ellen and Rosalind said, show different points of view. Try to turn things upside down so people could at least see. You can agree or disagree with the characters. As a writer, I do all the time. Characters do things, and I'm like, oh, are you kidding me? That's not right. But that's the character, so I have to get out of the way. And what, as a writer, I must always do is get out of the way of the audience and not tell, you know, Karen and Jamie and AJ what to think. That's not my right. This, you know, once I finish writing, this belongs to Ellen and Rosalind, the script, to interpret as they do, and Damone and everyone. And it's up to the audience to decide what they like and what they don't like. And that's the magic of it.
Yeah.
One thing I liked was the highway sign you used showing Monticello was 12 miles away. I've driven past that sign hundreds of times. So I was like, hey, I know that sign. Yeah, I grew up in Middletown, which is about half hour, 45 minutes from Monticello.
Oh. So you know this milieu, right?
Yes, I'm familiar with the area.
Yes.
That's funny because I, living in Baltimore, kept seeing that and saying, why don't they say Monticello?
And I'm nowhere near either of you.
So AJ and Gary, yeah. I had my own sort of flashback. I got a huge kick out of the picture of Toots Shore because when I was young and would take the train to the city, my dad would always say, meet me at Toots Shore. When you come to the train station, I'll pick you up. And it was sort of my family meeting place.
Really?
We'd go in there for a drink when I came up to Penn Station. That was sort of fun thing to see.
Well, it's so iconic, Toots.
Any New Yorker would recognize that, of course.
Yes, but you know, and Jackie Cushy did such a fun job with Toots Shore, as he did with LBJ. We had a You know, I mean, that's what LBJ, how he behaved.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Like,
great as
Dangerfield, too.
Yes, wasn't he?
Oh,
yes.
Was he Dangerfield? He was a great Dangerfield, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna do that, you know, not every single episode, but most episodes we're going to have some, you know, comedian, usually a comedian or some entertainer from that period appear in the nightclub. So we have someone very fun in episode 2. I will not say. I don't know how the hell we're going to. I don't know where we're going to find the person to play him, but but there were just so many fun entertainers that we want to remind people who they were too. I mean, in one episode, I mean, I could say, and too bad Damone and Russell. We're going to do. Does anyone remember Moms Mabley?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But she's been, you want to talk about forgotten legends. She's wonderful. Oh, my God. You just fell over laughing. So it's easy to do Joan Rivers or Alan King, but because they would be too big anyway to play at the nightclub. We want to find the people, you know, at a certain level. So that's going to be a lot of fun for us.
So, Gary, I have a question for you.
Go ahead, AJ.
Was there a discussion about wardrobe? Because that was one thing I noticed in the beginning, was that everybody was just kind of wearing whatever. And, you know, like, if it wasn't for the voiceover, the scene between Karen and Marty, for example, I wouldn't have known she was in the pool. Because I was kind of wondering why she had a towel around her neck. Until you give the voiceover saying that she's swimming. Was that a conversation where you wanted, you know, thought about having the actors dress differently depending on the scene, or was it just kind of, you know what, we don't care about that, we just want to focus on the story?
Yeah, I mean, I think the cast would have lost their minds if we said you had to go into wardrobe for each scene. Right, Rosalind?
Well, I'm sure they have, you know, stuff in the closet. Yeah.
I don't actually. Like, I'm in a different place filming a television show, and so I don't have other options. So it was what it was.
Well, we had to be – it really – Damone told the cast, don't go crazy. Pick one thing that suggests your character. So you had to concede to the scene and to the confines of it. I mean, with the everyone learning to change their virtual background was enough to be consistent. I think you're right. You could only ask so much. And again, we wanted people to concentrate on the role and the story and the characters rather than getting backlogged. And I think, like, you know, when suddenly Karen has a towel, that's like, oh, cool. You know, when you're such good actors as these folks are, it's they're going to come up with their own stuff.
Right, just that little prop.
You are so kind.
What's going on?
Well, it's true. Well, no, it is true. Yes, and it, and but then you try to layer in interesting thing like and you know, writing it was interesting because there was so much that we had to cut out in terms of stage directions, because shooting directions, because originally they were in there to convey the visual. Now, the one thing we did not want to do is have the audience confused, which you could have got lost on Zoom in a story like this. So we, as you know, we did interior, interior, exterior, exterior, and I think for episode 102, what we're going to do, now that we feel more confident that people are able to follow it, we're going to do, so we have the establishing shot of the church, the sign of the church office, and just one time we'll say interior Julian's office, and then after that we won't have to say that again. One time we'll say exterior Breezy Meadows, and then not again. So we're just going to have to trust that now that we think people can follow and just get back enough.
So, I mean, that was one kind of different aspect of this that was a little, I mean, it was a little unusual to have scenes begin with that little bit of stage direction there. I think for viewers who are unaccustomed to reading scripts, you know, those of us who read scripts for whatever reason are accustomed to like reading that at the beginning of a scene. And it did take a little while to get in that groove, but I would kind of liken it to like when I watch Shakespeare, it takes me like maybe the first 10 minutes of the play to get my ear in the groove of the iambic pentameter and whatever, the way, you know, and the accents and whatever. And so I kind of maybe liken it to that it took a few minutes to like get my brain in the groove of this happening thing you've ever seen. And I think you're right. We're getting into the next episode, like anyone who's going to watch through it, like will become attuned to it and not need that anymore. I think, I have a quick question. I don't want to keep you guys on too long.
Because we have to let Ellen go, because Ellen has to go wake up at like some ridiculous hour.
Oh my God,
it's
5 o'clock. Yeah.
Yeah. Probably like, like 4 a.m. That's not a comical number. That's the actual number. Yeah.
So I'm not sure. I think we have about 6 episodes this season? I forget how many episodes we have. 8 episodes. Okay. And we seem to have like, so it's set in, I think, 1966.
64.
Okay. So I'm just wondering, I know you don't want to spoil anything, but are we going to see more like real life events play out that could, like, I'm thinking, you know, the way the civil rights movement is going to unfold in the coming years is something that certainly like Tyra and Julian's storyline would really react to, or other kinds of things that happened.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, it's going to be interwoven with real life people.
Cool.
We promise you that.
All right. That'll be really interesting to follow and educational. I think to a lot of people, like, New York was always integrated. New York was always a melting pot. New York, people who didn't maybe live in this era aren't able to, remember that, right?
No, I grew up in a segregated white working class neighborhood. But so it was a melting pot within that. My mother had so many Catholic friends that we never ate meat on Fridays, and I thought it was a Jewish custom. I mean, I didn't know anything. I swear. And yet there was the black neighborhood, and there was the Hispanic neighborhood. But we all went to public school, and they took the best and brightest of us. They numbered class grades in those days, you know, grade 2-1, 2-2, on. But I went to school with kids from all the backgrounds, so like it was like a Noah's Ark. Trying, because the neighborhood was not kind of a fading neighborhood. But that was the melting pot back then. But no, it was, and the last thing, one of the reasons we wanted to set it in Brooklyn in the North is that I think when you do shows, period pieces about the 1960s and you touch on civil rights, it's always focused on the South with good reason, obviously, but the North gets a pass. And it should not. And there was fierce and violent bigotry and segregation in the North, and I think that should be explored.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, wow. All right. So we're going to let you guys go, but are these going to come out like once a week? When do I get to see the next episode?
Once a month.
It's a month?
The end of
oh,
April.
My God, Gary, you kill me.
I know. I know.
At least
we'll
it's
give
an
you
hour.
Drop.
It's not like a 10-minute, you know, mini web series.
Yeah,
that's
yeah Karen,
thing.
Give them some time.
The writer room is
all right.
As fast as he can.
Okay. All right. So, and so we saw a preview, I think. Is it up now for everyone to watch? We saw,
yes,
we had a link for a pre.
Yes, it's all there. It's, go to YouTube. We've got, I think, some 600 views already. And it just go to Joyland, all in caps, a new series. And just, there it is.
Awesome.
And leave a comment. Let us know what you think, please.
Cool. Okay.
Very kind reviews. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks for being here. It's such an interesting project. Good luck.
Pleasure
thank
talking
you.
To you guys.
Thank you.
Maybe we can have
bye-bye.
You back before, like, your season finale or something.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Yep.
Next month.
Okay. Or next month. Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll be back. Oh, absolutely.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Wonderful. All right. Thanks.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Have a good week, guys.
Bye.
Good night.
Bye.
You too. Bye.
You too. Bye.
Oh, you know what, you guys? I almost hung up. I almost thought it was the end of the call, and I was hung up.
I think Gary wants to come back and discuss each episode with us, which I'd be game for.
Yeah, that's
that'd be
fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That'd be fun. Yeah, I didn't realize
that'd
there was
cool.
a space to part either, but like I said, at least they, you know, they have more to each episode.
At least it's a whole hour, yeah.
Yeah, no,
I mean, it's a lot
yeah,
to produce.
I noticed it today on YouTube. It actually says it. In the description, I think, once a month.
See, I didn't realize they weren't. I guess I'm dumb and I somehow missed it, but I didn't realize they weren't all completed. I just kind of assumed they were until they're like, no,
yeah,
we got to
no.
do it. So yeah, now that makes more sense.
Yeah.
All
and,
right.
You know, it does sound like the cast was very involved. Like, they don't, this is not a big TV show with a huge production crew. Like, the cast and the writer and the director are all involved in trying to, like, as they said, research the photos they're going to use and all that, so... You know, they don't have a bunch of production assistants to do all the work for them. So no wonder it takes a month in between each one.
Yeah.
All yeah. Right. So, all right, that was fun.
Okay, Orbity,
yes,
go check that out if you haven't already. All right, well, we have a few more things tonight. I unfortunately did not get to The Walking Dead because I wanted to make sure that I got to see Joyland. But... I did not. I do want to see that one, too, because at least it's the other side of the characters I'm waiting to see. But
can I talk about it for a minute before?
Yeah, you can talk about it.
So this was a princess-centric episode, as you, I'm sure, gathered from the promos.
Yes.
They've been captured by the stormtroopers, by these guys in white
yeah.
armor, and they're being held in like, train cars, and it's an episode that's all about Princess. So you are going to watch it. I don't want to spoil it too much for you. But you know, we do get to learn quite a bit of her backstory. Like, this episode – so these six episodes are really, like, six kind of bottle episodes that aren't really related to the main story. They kind of are, but they're not part of the season that was broken for next season, right? And so they're all added. And so it was interesting to me that they're like, I'm like, oh, we're going to have this episode that's about Eugene and Ezekiel and Princess and what's going on. And then it turns out to really mostly take place, it's Princess's experience as they've been captured. And it really is an interesting way that they chose to, like, introduce, it was great that they could introduce this character and dump her whole backstory and help us get to know her and understand her before we go into the next season. So it was an interesting, and you know, I think there might have been a part of me that thought, wow, they're going to devote a whole hour to this new person. And then I think it's fantastic they did it, and we'll know her and understand her going into whatever happens going forward, right? I mean, I knew some
yeah,
of this
we'll
because
be
I've read her in the comic book, and I'm aware of what she's been through in her past, which actually is a little worse in the comic book than what we learn. But, AJ, it's pretty much the same kind of childhood and family experience that she has in the comic book prior to the apocalypse. That was kind of really interesting to me. We did not learn much about
the people who are holding them, but we learned some things, I think. So it just really played out well. And the actress who plays Princess is named Paola Lazaro. Paola Lazaro. She's fantastic. She's just really, I think particularly as a new person on the show, to have to carry an entire episode might be kind of hard. And I feel like this actress is every bit as charismatic as the character she's playing. And I thought she was really good.
Cool.
So I would say it's not, I think it's, so this is episode 4. I think it's like a top 2. Like I think, I thought last week's episode was really good with Gabriel and Aaron. And I thought this was, and it surprised
me. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Good to know. Yeah, we'll have to tell you. Chime in next week about it.
Yeah. I can stop there. We don't have to get into it. But I look forward to you watching it, and maybe we can just devote 5 minutes next week to recounting, like, what you think of her character and, like, a few things that we learned about her. Next week's episode is another Daryl and – the promo was another, like, sort of Daryl and Carol out in the woods kind of episode next week.
It could be good if it's not a flashback. I don't want to see. I want to see actual story.
Yeah. So given that it doesn't follow on this story, we can maybe just take 5 or 8 minutes next week to talk a little bit about what you think of this particular character and where she could be going.
Okay, cool.
Okay. All right. But, yeah, AJ, I don't know. I mean, she's a pretty good character in the comic, I think, introduced – late as she is in the show. I like her in the comic.
Princess is a lot of fun in the comic.
Yeah. And she's kind of fun in the show. I'm sure you've seen the ads. She's got, like, the purple hair and the pink jacket and all. And she's,
I've seen her.
Yeah. She's pretty manic and loud and funny and joking. But she reveals, like, some of... I mean, like, okay, it's not a spoiler to say that everyone on The Walking Dead has trauma in their past, right? Even before the apocalypse,
right.
They're all, like, terribly flawed people who've been traumatized. And she reveals some of that in this episode. She doesn't reveal as much as she does in the comic, but this was, like, really her first episode. So maybe we'll learn. I mean, it's basically the same backstory as the comics. So she's pretty good. She's a pretty good... they haven't ruined her. Well, that's because it's Angela Kang. Scott Kimball would have ruined her already, probably. But Angela Kang is great. So, anyway. During this episode, they, like, promoed the hell out of Fear the Walking Dead, which I think is back April 1st, and there was, like, a really long, like, not even a promo, I'd call it maybe a trailer. Like, they were showing the Fear the Walking Dead trailer during this episode. It's very long. Very long, like, was it 90 seconds? It just wasn't your usual, like, 30-second kind of thing that they do.
Right.
So,
yeah. I'm not sure. I was going to say, I'm not sure exactly what day that comes.
I think April 1st is Fear. Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
there's some stuff that must be coming up pretty soon then for that.
Maybe the week after. Like, I think Walking Dead has 2 more weeks, and then they'll probably go right into Fear after that.
All right, cool. Okay.
Maybe break for Easter. Maybe on Easter people don't want to watch Murder and Mayhem. I don't know.
You never know.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
That sounds good. Okay, so what do we want to move on to next?
So we should discuss Wynonna Earp, because AJ doesn't watch that, so let's just bang it out.
All right, so this episode was about the genie. Wynonna takes care of. I found that, well, this episode was really good. But I was just going to say, I kind of was surprised. I mean, this is how I think Wynonna, like, this last season is definitely acting different. Like, before she seemed to be giving them more of a chance, but obviously this isn't necessarily a good demon. I mean, she's acts like, oh, she has to do what they say and everything. But she seems like she's able to sort of manipulate some of what they ask for in order to twist it in her own way to some extent, and is only going to keep causing trouble. because obviously Winona almost gets killed in this, and thankfully doesn't. But yeah, so this was, I think, interesting in that sense. I'm trying to scan through, and like you said, it's got the whole trivia thing where they're rushing to try to beat each other. I think it's really funny when they're, like, forced into trivia so he can find the smartest and eat their brain, which kind of knows if that happens, they're going to get some kind of problem out of it. I'm just thinking of X-Files. It's like, what's an episode, Our Town? Not that that was a great episode, but you don't eat people.
Yeah. I really enjoyed this episode a lot. I texted you, and not everybody who listens to us knows that I'm like a big trivia person. I've played trivia every week for about 10 years now, on a very good team and competitive team in the league that we play in. And so I really got a huge kick out of seeing them be like so into trivia and it becoming such a big thing, particularly like we haven't really seen on the show any sort of like weekly community activity at Shorty's, right? Like this is not a, I don't know. It was just kind of a surprising thing that this town does. And that
hanging out outside of the craziness, right?
Yeah. And it's such a normal thing to be doing, to be going to like bar trivia, like so many people do, right? And then, yeah, that it turned out to be like that there was in the, like they got cursed and were compelled to play was kind of interesting. I have been enjoying, I think, the sort of monster of the week aspect after heavy, like mythology for a lot of last season and the front end of this season, right?
Yeah.
I mean, not heavy, it wasn't like Battlestar Galactica heavy, but it was sort of like the theme of
Yeah, we've gotten a little bit of break from that. Yeah, well,
yeah.
I think next one is more, it's hard for me to remember the order in my head, but I'm pretty sure the next one's when we start to get more of what happens. Because obviously, I mean, we want to see some mythology because we want to start to wrap up the series. And there's only a few left, so we have to kind of get that done. But I was going to say, what else is in this one? Is there anything in here that is the mythology? She already freed him. Sorry, I was reading that.
Yeah, there's a bit about like the things Nicole did like while she was alone. So the whole chicken kicker thing was kind of dopey.
it was funny though,
right?
Chicken kicker.
But it did bring us back to like what Nicole was doing while everybody else was in the garden, and she does try to confess to Doc that she had made a deal to hand Doc over to the Clantons, and which he already knew, right? And it was
right.
nice to see
I think
them
it's
make
good
up.
She told him. Yeah, but she's kind of like, I knew you'd find a way out. Like, she trusted him that he'd be okay. Now, whether she really believed that or not, I don't know, but
That she wasn't just saying that to kind of like, did she really believe that, or is that what you say to a person when you're like, I'm sorry, I tried to, like, sell you out and probably get you killed. I just thought, you know, like, right?
Yeah, I thought you'd be fine.
Yeah.
But I guess the other point is Nicole is ready to, as long as people accept her, because part of it was she was upset because they didn't choose her as a sheriff.
That was a little
surprising,
wasn't it?
Job, you know, she's like, yeah, well, I think the thing is we didn't really see a lot of the Clanton brother, the older brother, what kind of sheriff he was. Like, we just saw when they came in and everybody attacked them, so it was like it was this corrupt government. I mean, it probably was to some extent, but we really don't know. I mean, the one of the first things that brother did do was save Winona, and, like, she kind of forgot that. Not that he didn't, give her a crappy trial and was going to kill her anyway, but, I mean, you know. No, I don't know. But we really don't know what happened there because we didn't get to see it. We only saw it from their point of view, and but now Nicole's back on board.
Yeah, I guess I just never really thought of Nicole as a person who needed people to like her. And, like, I'm not going to be the sheriff because people didn't vote for me. Like Nicole, I felt like, has always been a character that's a little bit more like, I'm going to do what's right. I'm going to do what I think is right or what's the law because, you know, like she hasn't always –
since she was alone for that year and a half, she's been so needy, right? Like, she's a little bit of a different Nicole since she's been alone. And I've complained before that I'm not, like, it's hard for me to, it doesn't always ring true for me. I'm like, okay, a year and a half alone in purgatory, I guess. Like, okay, she was desperate. She's like a broken kind of a person. Right now.
Well, I think everybody can be insecure sometimes. But, yeah, I agree. It's a little bit out of character. But, I mean, a lot has happened since then.
I guess she's a little bit like Winona. Like, Winona definitely is, like, she's so self-loathing and so thinks she's not worthy of love and not worthy of, like, really anything good. And like, I guess that's a little bit of what we're seeing in Nicole. Like, she's definitely self-loathing for the things she did. For selling out Doc and other kinds of things, and like not the town didn't love her. Like, it's not the same as Winona, but I guess it's a little like I mean, Doc's like that also, right? Only Waverly's not like that. Touched on this a little bit, but I mean, the really interesting thing was at the end when, and you touched on it, when Winona decides to kill Ginny at the end. And she says, like, okay, Ginny, like, I noticed that, like, did he really, like, was, what was his name, Kuru? And I forget the guy's real name. But
demon thing he thought he was or whatever, but yeah, I know what you mean.
He thought it was a demon. But, you know, it was just a dude. But,
Who he thought he was. Yeah, was it his idea to eat the brains, or was that kind of...
Well, and like, I think not even... really so much that, but
she enjoyed killing the people, I think, or helping him.
Well, the way that, like, Ginny was always like, my master makes me do it, and when I was like, huh, and yet all your masters die in the end, which I blame Ginny, like, if it was three wishes and they're gone, okay, but Ginny explains, like, that's not how it works. He wished for infinite wishes, and I'm stuck with him forever until he dies, and so maybe I wouldn't blame Ginny for wanting him to die. But Winona's like, but they all die somehow, right? And Ginny's like, maybe... So Winona accuses Ginny of, like, actually liking to kill, but she gets to say that somebody else made her do it, right?
Right.
Like, Ginny's like, I'm a victim. And Winona's like, actually, maybe you're not a victim. Like, and in the end, like, Winona decides to kill her. I was a little surprised at it. That she decides to, like, so Winona no longer just kills every demon that she can find. Remember when she was, like, killing Revenants and she was basically going to kill all Revenants? And now they coexist with certain demons and not with others. So that she decides that Ginny is dangerous and must be killed, while, like, it just kind of surprised me that, I mean, I thought Ginny was not as dangerous as Winona seems to think she is. I guess I just wonder if there's more there going on.
No, yeah, I kind of felt like that too. But, I mean, she did kind of let him almost kill her at the same time, though. I agree with some of what Winona said. But, yeah, in the scheme of things, maybe she wasn't as the others. But, I mean, I don't know. She also didn't seem to have much empathy for it. Like, she acted, like, she tried to pretend she did. But she obviously wasn't very upset that these people were dying. It's like, yeah, well, he did it. Or he made me do it. And so, yeah, I can see both sides. But I think that if Winona had let her live, it may have not turned out great. We don't know. But what genie lets people wish for more wishes? I mean, come on. That's like the number one you're not allowed to wish this in, like, every fairy tale.
Right.
And
A big part of this was busting all our myths we have about genies. Like,
bunch
of stuff that she said. The genie's like, that's not how it works. Like, in fact, I think the genie says, like, there was an allusion to I Dream of Genie, and she's like, wow, you get one attractive, like, genie on television, and, like, everybody thinks that's, like, the deal, right? She's like, no, I don't live in a bottle. that was kind of funny. But, you know, I guess, you know, there was this part also where Genie says, like, I can make Doc love you. And it looks like Winona might hesitate for a moment
Yeah.
Right? And then, like... she, you know, and then so I know there's a bite, and then Ginny says, like, you and I are the same, but your master is that gun. Like, my master is, like, I always have a master, but your master is that gun, which I don't. It's kind of true, but it's kind of not true. Like when Winona doesn't have Peacemaker, she's.
Yeah, but I think that it's kind of maybe some of it, and I'm trying to, we're trying to remember the order of the episodes, but unless it's happened yet, I think that some of it's necessarily, I think also what happened with Clance and just Doc in general, I think that sometimes it leads her down maybe not necessarily the right road just because she feels like she has to take care of everybody and kill, you know, all the demons and that, rather than maybe, I don't know, figuring other ways. Like, she seems to be less about that. But I think a lot of it, I feel like she's very upset this season. So a lot of it, I think, is to do with the emotions, too, not necessarily just the feeling of, oh, I've got to, you know, got to kill demons.
Well,
it's not all about that.
And when
she does want to be able to do what she feels she needs to and not apologize.
But,
she said that.
And when she kills Jimmy, she says, you know, we're different. She says, no, we're not the same because you're free. Like, she shoots Jimmy and says, you're free now. Although, I think Peacemaker sends them to hell, so she's not really free. It's not like she's free to just be a normal soul now, right? They go to hell.
That's true.
I guess. I never really thought of a genie as a demon before, right? I guess I always sort of considered genies like some kind, but I don't know. Winona says you're free, but she did probably send her to eternal torment. But it also just kind of made me, like when she says you're free, like, it's definitely part of, like, because Winona's not free and will never be free.
Even though
she's free of the curse,
she's not free of the curse,
right? Yeah.
Right. But, yeah,
right,
but that's kind of the point of saying, like, I can't quit. You know, there's more I have to do to protect everybody yet. Yeah.
Although, is it to protect everybody, or is it just because she, I mean, her whole identity now is so wrapped up in being her pair. And, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
I know. It was a little... I guess after having shot Clanton in the back because it was the right thing to do and now killing Ginny because it was the right thing to do, like, is Winona, as you said, going down maybe not the right path?
Yeah, because we don't
necessarily
know
unnecessary
killing
path,
Clanton
right?
was the right thing to do. It's what she thought was the right thing to do. But, yeah.
Well, I mean, and from Doc's argument, making a deal with a guy and then shooting him in the back is never the right thing to do.
Right, yeah. That's what I mean. I don't know that she
right?
should have done that. Right, but you know, there's a few left. We'll get more on that. All right. Well, I think that's about it, unless I'm missing anything in particular, which I don't think I am. So, all right. Well, then let's move on. Do you want to do Debris or Resident Alien next?
AJ, what would you like to talk about?
Oh, let's get Debris out of the way.
Okay.
So I figured, Karen, and you seemed like you did, that maybe this one was a little bit more something that you would like a little bit more because it wasn't about the people's emotions and stuff that were controlling, or that the debris was controlling or whatever, like it wasn't connected in that sense.
Right. It wasn't so much like, when her we've had a couple of episodes in a row where, like, emotion was either causing the unexplained phenomenon or what the way they solve it. So this was a little more, I wouldn't say it was science-based, but it was a little more of a normal kind of a case.
No, but they got their emotional part in.
They did.
I don't think it matters per se it's emotional, but I think that I liked it that wasn't the
I was just being sarcastic.
Cause, like you said. No, I know you are. I'm just saying, I did kind of like, I mean, it didn't really bother me before that it was, but I liked that it was different. And I thought the whole terraforming scenario and stuff was interesting because that actually kind of makes sense that, like, if the ship came down, it would have been programmed to do that if the aliens were going to live here. Like, it makes sense. Although the fact that it was kind of like backwards and sort of terraformed the people, I guess, in a way, was interesting.
I mean, it's kind of frightening. Like, so is the point to terraform the Earth so aliens could live here? And really, all humans would die if they did. Like, humans cannot breathe chlorine. Those people actually, I mean, it was kind of, like, was it intentional or was it an accident that those people became adapted to breathe chlorine?
Well,
right?
That's what I said. It was weird that it was sort of backwards that it adapted them. But, I mean, that would lead me to believe that maybe they didn't intend to kill. I mean, we don't really know. But I would say that that's definitely a possibility that they're thinking of not destroying all the life automatically on the planet, unless they need them for food or something. I mean, we don't know. There's always that.
Didn't
but,
you just get
I
that
mean,
they don't eat people?
Yeah. They might eat people.
I mean, this is,
but
this is not a civilization that puts on spaceships and goes down so they can breathe in our environment. This is a species that's going around with the ability to alter any planet to suit their own needs, we think, or so it seems, right? Like, I can't see any benefit
right.
to humans from being converted to breathe an atmosphere that doesn't exist on our planet. So it has to be to benefit the aliens. And so
probably.
That they are
but, I mean, we just
flying
know it,
around with the intention of
though.
Terraforming is not to our benefit. I don't really see how that is possible.
Well, it could be one of the, and I'm not saying it is, I'm just thinking of, like, the different scenarios of these kind of sci-fi type movies. I mean, it could be that, like, our planet's going to shit because we're destroying it, you know, and maybe they're benevolent and they're trying to fix that. I don't know. I think it could go either way, but I think, yeah, it's probably more likely to err on the side of caution with that. But I did like in this one that they were able to, you talked about last week how they used, were able to use the debris to, like they focused the beam or whatever, and they were able to actually get it to work and use it. So I did like how they were able to use a different debris in here in order to help them out, even if maybe it wasn't the best solution. And even though it was added the emotion to the scene, I did like the way that Fiona found a way to help that guy without completely going against the rules, I guess.
What?
Yeah, but the fact that Brian, like that she wasn't allowed to tell him, but she, I mean, she didn't, like, take him there or make him do anything, but she just kind of, like, let him know what was really going on so he could make his own choice, which is also obviously connected to her making, would have wanted to make her own choice knowing about her father. But I don't know, I like that. The fact, though, that Brian was, like, just willing to let them all die, I mean, I don't know, he was a little cold in this one. I think that's kind of what you were getting at when we were starting to talk about it in the chat, that he just seemed to be, like, fine with everything.
Yeah.
I also
AJ,
thought his
you,
side of it, too,
what,
though, about the people you're trying to save versus the people that have to die.
I thought he was basically a dick in most of this episode, and I think that is partly based on we know that he's withholding this information from Fanola, and that probably colors my opinion. But, AJ, what did you
this
make of this episode?
I was bored.
Mm-hmm. I thought this was more boring than last week. Yeah.
I'm not feeling it. I keep waiting for it, and nothing. I don't know. I just everything is just everything feels very monotonous. It's, you know, it's all Monster of the Week. It's just it's not even intriguing Monster of the Week. You know, it's just like. Everything's. It feels like it's just. I mean, what was this episode 4? I just feel like they haven't moved forward with anything yet. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be honest with you. I kept waiting for something to happen with Maddox and his kid. You know. Oh, and his wife's totally having an affair. That's about the only thing that moved that happened. Maddox's wife's having an affair. She's like, I don't look at your phone. What are you? Get away from my phone. Oh. Why else would she freak out when he answered the phone and somebody hung up?
Maybe she's also some sort of agent
or she's a
working
villain.
Against him. Yeah.
I was just going to say, that would be interesting at least. At least that would be interesting, but I'm pretty sure she's just having an affair.
I mean, I think it's very interesting. Okay, so I shouldn't say very interesting because I too found this episode to be pretty boring. And I lay a lot of it on I just don't see chemistry between Fanola and Brian. And for them to be in conflict, I don't care about it the way I would care. Like, the way when Scully and Mulder were in conflict, it really created tension for the viewer, and I really cared about them being able to make their way through it, right? And if Mulder knew that Scully's father was alive and was keeping it from her, like, even in season one, that would be huge, right? For them to argue about whether or not people should die, I mean, I really kind of, I had to be with on Fanola's side with this, like Brian, like wanting to sacrifice fewer for the greater good. I mean, he didn't even really know. Like Brian was like, we have to let them die because if we don't act now, maybe we can't stop the terraforming. But that was a maybe. That was like not, like he says, I'd rather sacrifice these people for the people we can definitely save. But I mean, he didn't really know that. And as we said in chat, like, for 3 weeks now, every time Fanola's like, no, we have to save people, Brian's like, okay. And then all of a sudden this week, he's like, no, we can't save people. And, like, I'm not really sure where that came. Like, they hardened him up this week.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering if they're just trying to kind of play that balance of them being opposites on that side, which doesn't necessarily work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it almost feels like, and maybe this is why it feels like it doesn't work, but it almost sometimes, like, especially last week, I felt it. It feels like Brian intentionally goes against her to see what she'll do. Like, last week, Brian agreed that they needed to save those people in the force in the pocket dimension. But he never said a word. He let Fanola do all the talking, and he's like, all right, let's go save the people now. You know, it's
maybe
almost
that's like
his
thing about he wouldn't touch the nacho. He let somebody else do it first. Brian was a,
you know, well, it's
go
just
ahead.
Like it seems like he's feeling her out, maybe, you know, trying to get a feel for exactly how far she'll go for what's right and humanity and everything. So I think this week it just kind of seemed like he gave her some adversary to go against, because if he wasn't the one saying no, there was nobody else that was going to tell her no.
But isn't she sort of a hypocrite, because she didn't tell those people what was happening, right? Like, they just told those people, she's like, oh, we found a way to help you. She didn't say, we're going to freeze you in time, and we don't really know it when or even if we can ever save you, and you might not wake up for 30 years and everyone you know will be dead, and your life will never be the same. Like, she didn't tell them that. She didn't tell them that.
I feel though like that wouldn't necessarily be a safe thing, because they would freak out. I think it was more just giving him a choice, and I think it was obviously her opinion
didn't give anybody
changed
else a choice.
Because of what she found out. No, I mean, I think it was kind of like, you didn't tell me about my husband, I'm not going to do the same thing, or my husband. You didn't tell me about my father, I'm not going to do the same thing to somebody else. I mean, I think that was the basis of her making that
decision.
But she
did exactly the same thing.
But she did.
She didn't tell any of those people what was happening to them. Like, at the last minute, Ephraim's wife, sister-in-law is saying, it'll be fine, they're going to take care of us. And no one else told them.
I feel like it's kind of a kindness, but yeah, maybe they should make that choice too.
But that's such a patriarchal and condescending, like, not, I don't mean you are. I mean, it's patriarchal and condescending for the government agents to make that decision that it's a kindness and they can't handle, you can't handle the truth. Right?
No, but like they have a very limited amount of time, and if the people freak out, they're going to run out and die and make it work. You know what I mean? Because how many of them are going to believe that? I feel like some of them would have ran out. Yeah, and it's their choice. But I feel like to some extent the government, and I'm not saying that it's right, but I mean, like, they had to make a choice of what to do and save them. And it was kind of like, we're shutting this down whether you save them or not. So, like, you have this amount of time to do it. And, like, they didn't necessarily have time to go through everything. They just, like, use it or don't. But, yeah, she could have told them, and at least right before they did it, said, like, you guys might sleep for a while or something.
She's all pissed that Brian's keeping information from her. She's keeping way more important information from
well,
other people that she's supporting with.
Well, telling one person. But
who might have a shitty life when they wake up or might never wake up.
While I completely agree with what Karen's saying, their choice would have went like this had she told them. We have an idea to kind of like put you in suspended animation until we can find a cure. It could be 10, 20 years from now. We don't know. If you don't want to do that, then those guys are going to shoot you.
But that's their choice.
That's what I mean.
But that is
like,
their choice.
No, I agree. I'm just saying, those are the choices. But yeah, I completely agree with you.
They could have also went after them and tried to kill them too.
If that's the choice, and you're 100% sure everyone will go along with you, then why not tell them the truth? Right, Fanola? I don't mean AJ.
Right.
I mean, if that's their choice, is either go with me or be killed, then give them the choice. Like if there is
even
a choice, then definitely give them the choice. Like, it's just so wrong and hickle of her to, particularly in a show that everyone who hears about aliens immediately is like okay with it. like they tell this guy Efren that like, but okay, really what happened was aliens came down here in their ship crashed and this debris is causing all this. And he's like, oh, okay, can I go see them? Like, we've never seen a person have a complete like dissociative meltdown from learning that alien.
Not for nothing,
really
Karen.
Either though.
Either one of you, if tomorrow we learned that we've had visitors from other planets and other galaxies, if you found that out tomorrow, would you freak out?
No, but if I found out tomorrow that QAnon was real, I would freak out. Like, it all depends what your frame of reference is, right? Like,
My point being, in today, and honestly, I kind of like the fact that nobody's freaking out. I think part of it is because we're in the middle of it. Like, we're in the middle of the story. But I think part of it is because in the real world, we have so many movies about aliens and this, that, and the other thing, some good, some bad, that I think, you know, if people have been seeing spaceships for centuries, you know, I was abducted, an anal probe, you know. I honestly think for the first time ever, I think the general public would be okay with it. They'd be like, oh, finally, you're telling us the truth. We knew, you know, we've suspected this for years. Thank you for finally telling us, you know.
And we also discussed, at least, I don't know if AJ, you were on this chat or it was just me and Jamie, but I mentioned that Fanola is the worst liar and the worst keeper of information ever. She's the worst agent ever because, like, Efren shows up and he's like, what's going on here? Why can't I see my family? She's like, something weird's going on. You'll just have to stay here. We just can't tell you. Whereas, like, on every, like, if it was, like, Men in Black.
Yeah, make up something.
X-Files. They'd be like, oh, gas leak. Sorry. There's a horrible, like, train derail, chemical spill. You can't go in here. Like, it would be if this is the way that, what is their company called? Orion? Whatever the secret agency is they work for. If this is the way they cover up, Influx is the bad guys. The agency they work for is called. If this is the way an ultra-secret multi-governmental agency covers up mysterious phenomena, of course the whole planet knows about it. They're relying on Fanola to be like, nothing. I can't. Just look over there. Right? Like,
maybe she's
like,
the one that briefed everybody, and that's why they're like that.
Like, the number one lie the government tells is that a train derailed and there was a chemical spill. She could even say there's chlorine gas, which would be, like, partially true, right? Like, how hard is it to lie? She's the worst. So, yes, AJ, everyone would believe it because the whole planet, like, people – in the first episode, someone falls, like, 14 stories through a ceiling, and they're like, any witnesses? Oh, nothing we can't handle. What? Like, we talked about this. Do they have a Men in Black flashy thing? Like, how are they?
There was a pipe burst and water has been rotting out the floor in that area for a month and nobody realized it. It's been slowly decaying the floor.
You have to work for them. They have to hire you.
Oh, that's a terrible lie. But at least it's something.
Yeah. No, you're right.
I mean, she's the worst, and I don't know, that the end of the episode hinges on lies, and she's, like, the worst at it, and, you know, I don't see any way she's going to be able to withhold from Brian that she knows, that he knows, because she's the worst.
I think Brian already knows she knows, because she's like, you've got a lot to clean up here, I'm going to go back and start writing the report, and the look he gives her. It's like he knows she's full of shit, which just goes to your
like,
point
you
that she's
start
awful at lying.
She like gets a phone call and then she's like started treating him really badly. That's also a conundrum.
She doesn't know
like,
how to put shit close to her vest.
He's supposed to be so like sort of conflicted and guilt stricken that he can't tell her the truth, and yet he's like, whatever, let them all die. We gotta like worry about other things, right? Like, he's not. I don't know. I guess it's interesting, like, so there's a lot of faults with the show, and AJ and I in particular are not giant fans, but I guess it's kind of interesting that they let this happen so early. It's only the fourth episode, and already, like, one agent is keeping a secret, and the other agent finds out about it, and there's all that. So I guess that's kind of interesting. One of the more interesting parts to me also was when they showed – okay, Brian's boss, his name is Maddox, right? So they show Maddox at home, and Maddox is sort of this, like, maybe a bad guy who is in it with Influx, who's making secret deals with Influx and helps Influx steal a piece of debris last week. And then this week they totally humanize him by showing him, like, doing therapy. His son appears to maybe have a traumatic brain injury or some other kind of, like, physical and cognitive thing that they're working on, right? And they show this, like, extended scene of him, like he's a loving father working really hard to help his son get better. And so that, like, surprised me a little bit. I mean, and then the wife gets this message. So, I mean, which is crazy because, like, I get unknown callers all day long. They're all telemarketers, right? Like, you guys get unknown callers calling. I have friends whose phone number.
This is why we only have a cell phone now.
And if anybody calls you on an unrestricted landline, it comes up restricted, and it's just, I know restricted is my friend who's got an unrestricted landline, right?
That's happening on cell phones, too. I get them all the time.
Yeah, and does like, your wife freak out because you got a restricted phone number calling you? No, because she gets them all day long also, like, right?
Right.
But she could have a government job that we really don't know.
It was kind of dumb to have that kind of freak out, only because, right?
Well, exactly.
To be honest.
I was going to say, the freak out immediately screamed to me that she's having an affair, especially if you couple it with last week where she was MIA and Maddox almost had to rush home, and then, oh, don't worry about it, she's home now. Okay?
Yeah.
Where was she, you know? Ooh, had a little trouble getting out of the hotel? But at the same time, I hope I'm wrong, because to find out that she's, like, working for Influx, or she's working for, you know, she's working for a secret organization, and even he doesn't know, you know, like, if she's involved in it somehow, that would be kind of cool. That would actually add to the story and maybe move things forward. I mean, personally, I would love to see Finola's dad and what's going on with what Influx, you know, I would actually like to see the Influx side of things more. Because at least there's a little action there and stuff happening.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you guys. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I had texted this to you guys because I was trying to remember. I thought there was a comment. I had thought before that the father was with Influx, but they said, I don't remember exactly what they said.
No.
There was a line, that made me think that he was there against his will, but we don't really know that. That's what I was curious if you guys heard that, or it was just me.
Well,
I guess you did.
No.
No, that's what MI6
Craig,
said. Yeah, M told Finola what I say.
We don't
that her dad was being held captive.
But MI6 appears to not have the same intel. Like, what they sent Finola was pictures of her dad in a car. They did not send the footage that Brian – send the footage that Brian saw of Finola sitting with the body, and then the footage drops out, and it appears the body has been switched, right? So it could be that kidnapped him. It could be that he's the leader of Influx, I think.
So that's true?
And that maybe
there's
more
to his body, and he was really dead, but they needed his body and they cloned him.
Maybe he masterminded it.
Give us some of that story.
That's very possible. I didn't mean it.
I mean, the other thing is, we know the debris has the ability to clone people, and while we have not seen fully functioning clones that can really fool you, like we saw the first clone was the little boy who was sort of stuck in a loop, and then we saw Brian clone, but those also were not really like fully thinking functioning clones, but if you get the right pieces of debris together, could you clone a person in it? Like, could Maddox's wife be a clone?
Yeah.
Probably not, but that's a possibility also, right? A
clone
that's acting on behalf of
other... Let's be careful there, Karen. We don't want to run into, you know, where everybody's involved in the cloning.
Be bullshit and annoying, but...
We don't want this to become the following.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. But that also would be a more interesting outcome than just the wife having an affair, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Unless she's having an affair with Scroobius Pip because he's, like, unless she's having an affair and doesn't know it's an Influx person who's trying to get
I was just
going to
say
like
that. I was literally just going to say that. We thought of it at the same time.
Great minds. We have a clone brain.
Yeah, I believe that.
That all would be more interesting to me than Brian's, like, because I was in Afghanistan,
right?
I think it's okay to kill these people or whatever. Or, and then they have this, like, you know, I don't know, Brian's backstory is being so secretive and weird. You know, this guy shows up and is like, remember our friend who died? And like all this, like, I don't know. I think they're trying to make Brian more complicated and complex. And meanwhile, he's not really a person to me. I don't want to blame this actor because I've seen him do really great work. So I got to blame the director and the writers for the way Brian is coming off as, to me, really not likable or interesting or someone I care about. Like, if he left and they gave Fennell a different partner, that'd be fine with me.
He's very monotonous.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's monotonous.
Yeah.
He doesn't really have a personality.
Right now. No, he doesn't. And, like, I'm sorry, but
really
Elvis sunglasses are not a personality.
I mean, is, what's his face? I can't, Wyman. Did he create the show and walk, did he create the show and walked away? Or, I mean, what's going on? I mean, this isn't what I was expecting from him. You know what I mean?
Well,
I mean,
particularly since the last
thing
he gave us, the characters were so, like, fully, they were so fully realized and fully dimensional and interesting and compelling and, and we haven't seen that yet. So is it like a J.J. Abrams situation where he creates a show and then really isn't involved, you know, like he's got so much going on and isn't always really, like, involved deeply in a show anymore, which is fine. I mean, Wyman is a fantastic idea man, and that's great. But, yeah, I mean, Noel and Brian are a little bit too much. So I don't want to say they're, like, man of science, man of faith, but they kind of are, right? Or man of...
A little bit.
No, they're not.
Brian's
not
a man of science.
Not,
he's just a man of coldness.
They're not that interesting. They're not as interesting.
They're not.
At least people of science and faith, they have an interesting conversation.
Yeah. But they're not, like... Yeah, these two are not... I think Fennell is a little more developed and a little more realized than Brian, but still very, like... Like, I've not really seen any justification for her to have her job. Like, it seems she got her job just because of who her father is and not because of any, like, innate ability as a fantastic field agent. She's smart and she figures stuff out, but, like, I'm sorry. The level of her father's involvement, I don't know. Anyway, I'd like to see some big changes.
Yeah, there's got to be more. They got to do something.
I think I need the two main characters to be more. The fact that I'm way more interested. We talked so much about Maddox and his wife, which seems to be the thing that most interests me and AJ right now. A character we've never seen before and was in one scene and said like three lines. We're like, what's up with her? She's really interesting.
Yeah. That's the most action we got in the entire episode.
Yeah. I mean, so Jamie, I think you did. Were they on the press tour? Did you have some interesting information coming out of them? That you can share it, but
I mean, we talked to the same people again, so there wasn't. I mean, we still really have not seen a whole lot of their two characters, so there's still not a whole lot they can say. I will say that I asked Norbert about, because I had talked to you guys and how I'd said, you know, maybe our government needs what he's doing in that, and I asked if, you know, should we assume that he's, you know, on the other side? Can we trust him? And what he did say is, at least at this point, you absolutely shouldn't trust him. So we'll have to wait and see. But, yeah, they don't they still haven't been in the series a whole lot, so it's hard to even know really what to ask. You know what I mean? That's why I'm kind of surprised they had the same actors again. But I don't – maybe they couldn't get, you know, the others.
Yeah.
Not that they aren't nice to talk to. I don't mean it like that. It's just their characters haven't been a whole lot.
But they had, like, Leo Norbert, and they had Scroobius Pip, who plays the influx guy. And it's interesting they keep making him available because his character is really, really good. Nothing.
We know nothing.
Right?
I know, and that's kind of what I told him. I'm like, can you talk about influx or about Fennell's father? And I mean, of course he can't. So it's you know, there's not a whole lot.
They keep making available this character who's barely been on the show. Who doesn't have a name yet? I don't think, right? Like that's really interesting.
He has his character as a name, but it might just be, you know, on Aaron's database.
I think his name's
Anson
Ash, I think is his name. Yeah.
Anson Ash.
I know,
is his
they're
name,
great,
yeah.
and they seem like the characters are really interesting, and like I do want to know more about their characters, but it's kind of like we haven't seen enough to know what we want to know. You know what I mean? Other than they're very mysterious. But yeah, I mean, they talked a bit more about the mystery and things like that. But yeah, that'll be up soon. And actually, because for people who don't know, a whole bunch of sci-fi and NBC shows I have stuff coming from. Because I did 21 interviews in 3 hours today. So there's a lot. Or not 21, 12. How do I get? See, I can't even count.
I was like, I can't even count
12. No, 12 in 3 hours. Anyway, there was a lot. And Winona too. I don't know if I'd mentioned that. Because people might want to look at that. But that will be all that stuff is coming. And Resident Alien, which we're about to talk about.
Yep. Okay. So maybe we're ready to move on to that.
That sounds
like a plan.
All right. So Resident Alien. Now, this is one I was waiting for you guys to see. I was curious what you thought. I mean, obviously, I saw it a long time ago, and I've been waiting to talk about it, so I want to know what you guys think.
I really liked it. I mean, this is hands down the best episode of the season. I mean, Darcy is actually useful. I mean, I can't complain about anything about the episode. I thought the whole thing, you know, part of me though was a little surprised, but actually Asta helped me prove my point about debris. She finds out Harry is an alien. She's like, okay, kind of sort of was a little surprising that she was so easy about it. But I think the stuff he said to her kind of helped. He's like, I'm still the person, you know. Which is ironic considering once he's in complete full alien form and he has his little device there, he's like, I get to destroy the humans now, yay!
Yeah. I enjoyed it also. I think this was my favorite episode of the season, which is not saying much considering I hated a lot of it, but...
Okay.
I agree that this was the best episode of the season. I think it was a well-written episode. I think the action, it was well-paced. The pacing was good. The storyline was good. The acting was good. Like everything about it was good, and it flowed nicely. I am surprised that they revealed to Asta, and yet I'm not, because how long could Harry really keep this up, right? And she's his only real friend. Like, they have to give his character a friend. Or an ally, because the joke of him keeping it from everyone can only play out for so long, right? Like, it makes, the little boy, Max being the only person you know, like, that was great, Max. But they sort of played that out, so.
But he
needs
an adult
good.
To know it.
Yeah. There was a point where Asta had to know, especially to make Asta, like, I don't know, a little more interesting main character, but. I agree. This was Darcy. I was like, I actually like Darcy, and Darcy's cool, and Darcy showed for once I understood, like, not that I understand why Asta's friends with her, because they've been friends since they were kids, but like her whole history as a skier and knowing about like and being an outdoors person and all that, and like having the disappointment of that injury and getting through it and becoming a more resilient person. Like, played out so well in a way that for being like a drunken skank, like, never really worked for me that much, right? I think the depth she should have had been given for a couple episodes now, really, like, she was great. Like, I hope they don't make her go back to like useless Darcy, because she was great in this episode, and not just because she like saved them, but because she had like a personality and like a history that played out.
You know,
I kind of agree with you. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you saying that actually just made me think about it. I think it actually I've gotten under this episode, and just from what you were just saying, it kind of rounds Darcy out, and it makes you realize maybe that Darcy acts the way she does is because she's still dealing with that disappointment of missing out on going to the Olympics, you know? I think she, rather than put her best foot forward and make the best of things in her life, she chose to not and has kind of just become this caricature. You know, it's
yeah.
I feel like maybe she's hiding all her pain that she's never really dealt with in being the person that we've seen the first 7 episodes.
Right, like dedicating your entire life to the Olympics and then not getting there and not having any real plans for your life or any real skills other than skiing and drinking.
Because who wants to make plans to do something else in her life only to fail again, so why even bother type of attitude?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm inclined to agree with AJ that Asta's immediate acceptance of Harry being an alien was a little surprising, and yet it was like right in front of her eyes in the way that Max saying he's an alien, like, but like in bleeding glowing blue blood right in front of her, I guess was
you
can't deny it. That she decides to help him is kind of interesting. Like, she's not,
I think that says a lot about her.
Well, yeah, and as AJ said, he says, I'm still the same person that you know. And she's like, okay, I'll help you. It was all a little,
yeah, it's a little
I
quick,
don't know.
But,
it was nice to see her father come into the scene, right? Because her father plays off the other side of it. Her father's like, what? Yeah, I'll chop his leg off. Yeah, you know.
get him away from the fish.
That continues to be very funny. But yeah, I was going to say, I was a little surprised Asta found out early. I get at the same time you were, and I kind of like that too. But, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of like the Clark Kent thing. Sometimes they pull it on forever. Sometimes they definitely go too long. So I appreciate that at least somebody's going to know. I mean, I don't necessarily need everybody to know, but you at least need somebody in on the secret. But her, like, trying to save him and sticking her hand up inside him and stuff, like, was hilarious. I definitely agree, one of the best episodes and one of the funniest episodes, and, you know, she's learning what he is, and, yeah, I just think the whole episode was pretty funny, and I was glad that now we have this reveal, and obviously it's going to change their friendship or working relationship, you know, whatever. Obviously, it's going to change it. We'll just have to wait to see how, and
I actually thought it was one of the least comedic and least funny episodes of the season, which might be why I liked it better.
I'm not saying the whole thing's hilarious, but I think the scene of her, like, trying to help him and, like, having to put whatever she did, I forget, inside his chest and stuff, like, with all the goo and that, I found that scene very funny. Not necessarily the whole thing, but that that scene I thought was funny. And when her father
died. I do have one complaint about the episode.
Yeah?
The mayor.
What?
The mayor.
The mayor's the
who
worst.
Continues
the
mayor's to be a buffoon. Okay, but
he's
I was
a man
so proud of him. I was so proud of him. The sheriff gives him awful advice, and he stands up to the sheriff and says, you know, and he's like, he goes, why would I take it, you know, advice about women from you? Maybe I should ask deputy. Oh, wait, I can't. She quit because of you. I was so proud of him for having a backbone, and then he totally takes it as advice with his wife. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, this guy's an idiot, which kind of did work out nice, though. I did like what she said. You know, he's like, you know, it kind of made sense in the aspect because he's like, well, I thought you wanted me to challenge you. And she's like, yeah, but not like this. And I thought it was great that she ends up ordering for him. She's like, but you hate Esther.
Yeah.
I mean, it is kind of unbelievable that a grown man who's been married for a number of years and has a child would actually take advice like, oh, order for her. Now, AJ, we know your wife, Alyssa, and I would not try to order for her in a restaurant. I would try to order for anyone because that's like emasculating or infantile, making them like a child, right? But like, would you order for your wife no matter who your wife is, right? Like, what? Like, this is
no,
a person who can.
I tell my
maybe if they like ordered.
I tell my kids
every time
to order
them
for themselves.
Right? Yeah. In what way? Like, are there really men who think it's romantic to order for women? I don't know. I guess maybe in some weird.
Something
I mean,
from
the sheriff.
I mean,
weird. Never been
maybe
because it wasn't.
Maybe in one of those movies where you know, the guy's a millionaire and he's like, hey, you know, hey, would you like to go to lunch? I know this great little Italian place. And then he flies them to Italy, and then he orders for her because she doesn't speak the language.
Right.
Maybe in that scenario, but.
So he was trying, just not in the right way, which is kind of dumb. I mean, he should have known better.
I also don't really care about that storyline. Like, there's so much going on, and, like, the mayor and his wife's little relationship business is not, like, I like Max. I don't really, like, I mean, the mayor's the worst, but, like, their storyline is a distraction to me. Like, why do I care about these two? They're interesting only to me in that they're Max's parents, and to see their marital problems is just not, like, to me, it's one of, if there's too many storylines, can we please get rid of this one?
Well, what do you think about Bad Scully befriending her in the bathroom?
I was wondering if that was in this episode. I didn't want to say that.
That was an
considering
interesting
their storyline is kind of it made them interesting.
It did suddenly make them interesting. I mean, it became a very quick kind of a thing from last week's episode where Bad Mulder and Scully are in a hangar with Linda Hamilton, and then suddenly within like a 1 hour episode they actually find where Harry is, right? And I mean that was kind of it makes the mayor and his wife more interesting. I don't think we needed this lengthy blah blah storyline of their marital trouble to put them in a restaurant and be bumped into by Bad Scully.
Yeah. They could have still bumped into her and not had the extent of that.
Well, it was an intentional bump into. They could have been anywhere.
Well, yes, but I mean, like, they didn't have to have the whole dinner scene in order to explain that they bumped into her, was my point.
My absolutely favorite part of the entire restaurant scene is when we see that Liv is there having dinner with her boyfriend, I guess.
Yes.
And I love that. I love that they gave Liv like a full life and without really commenting on it or making a big deal out of it. Like, we see that Liv has a boyfriend and she does normal things. Like, I think we'd only ever seen her in uniform and like being like treated badly
and bowling.
And I think it was kind of easy to maybe assume she was a person who was devoted to her job and wasn't able to, like, because she can't speak up for herself at work. Or not that she can't, because she's steamrolled by this man at work, that she, like, I just loved that it was like this very matter of fact, normal thing that she happened to be there having dinner with her boyfriend in a very normal and healthy kind of a way. And I just loved that they gave that to Liv and didn't make a big deal about it. And even you know, the sheriff, like, he doesn't comment on it. Like, it's a thing that everybody knew that we didn't know. I thought that, to me, that was like a highlight of the episode for me, was seeing that. I mean, she's great, and we know she's going to be, I mean, we think she's going to be, I'd like to think she's going to be a big part of this. But,
well, so, yeah, especially considering that was episode 8. We only have 2 episodes left. Now, Jamie, do you know if they're going to solve, if the murder is going to be solved this season, or is it going to carry over?
I don't know if I'm allowed to say that or not. I thought maybe I had already before. So
okay, I don't know. My point.
They wrapped things up. I'll just.
Okay, that's my point. I'm not asking you to tell me who the killer is.
I don't want to get
the premise of the show.
But some of that is. It's dealt with. I'll just say that.
My point is, hopefully, we
don't want him to take certain things, you know, forever. I mean, it seems like that was going to be a season-long thing anyway.
That's what I was getting at, though, because a lot of shows like this, the way they're structured is, you know, you have this overarching storyline, which in this case is the murder of the doctor. And it's usually solved by the end of the season, and then a bunch of other stuff happens in between. And then other shows carry it through, you know, to the next season. And for me, this doesn't seem like the type of show to carry it through, which is why I was curious if you knew the answer. because I never really heard.
Yeah, I don't want to give the details, but yeah, I mean, it's not. I don't think it's
yeah,
like
it wasn't
a pathology thing or anything like that. But yeah, but I'm trying to think how to say this. I will say that I think that regardless of that story, and granted, I have not seen past episode 9. Like, you know, there's at least one more. So I don't know absolutely the answer. But I think that what you're talking about, that doesn't necessarily mean that story arc is over. But it's not like
mm-hmm.
left where you're annoyed wanting
gotcha.
To know type of thing. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's the best way to explain it. All right. There's also, you guys, I will say, because I had I talked to Corey, plays the sheriff, and I had asked him to talk about one scene. There is a scene with him and Liv coming up too.
The sheriff and Liv will have a scene together again.
Yeah. I enjoy the scene. One of the scenes they have coming up in the next episode, and we'll have up about that probably after the episode airs. But anyway. There's some stuff coming up there that I think you guys might like. So, all right. Well,
okay.
I think that's it. Yeah. Obviously, I talked about next week because of Terry in it, and I do like the episode. It's definitely, I don't know. Going off of this episode, it's not like what I expected to see, I guess. Not that that's, you know, a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just saying, like, it wasn't, I guess, what they expected they'd be dealing with next, but I really like the episode
mm-hmm.
where they went with it. So.
All right.
Okay.
So before we hang up, I just want to say, I don't know if you guys have seen the news late this evening that George Segal died, who's like...
I did not see that.
You know, yeah, George Segal died
mm-hmm.
today. Who, you know, I mean, so I don't watch the Goldbergs. I remember him most recently from like Just Shoot Me. And of course, he's been like in a million movies and TV shows, right?
Yeah.
Because if you watch TV, you've seen George Segal in like everything as a great character actor and whatever. So I just wanted to mention that.
Okay.
It's kind of a bummer to end our podcast on, but we should like, you know, I just saw it was like,
yeah.
Oh, we should mention that this great actor who's been in everything past. He was 87.
Oh my God,
And he died from complications of bypass surgery. So, you know, he was 87. He had a good long life and career, but anyway. Rest in peace, George Segal.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. So next week we're back with all these shows plus Snowpiercer. He's back.
Two
finale.
Yeah. A big episode of Snowpiercer. Big old
and
finale.
Then,
it's gonna be.
I keep trying to access stuff on my phone and I can't because I'm talking on the phone. Okay, and I was going to say next week is the 30th, so we still won't be into the stuff that starts the 1st. But obviously,
right.
You probably should mention that Manifest
yep.
as well. And I will say, even though I had to research what happened in between because there was no way I could, like, rewatch that before I did the stuff today, I really like the season. I'm really enjoying it, where it's going.
Yeah, so you had to power your way through catching up on season 2. 1 and 2.
Right.
But now you've started watching Screamers for season 3.
Yeah.
You're saying, right?
I mean, you kind of got to know what
like,
happened.
No, I'm not saying, I don't mean that in a way that sounds bad for you. I mean, you caught up, and now you're not saying you like season 2, you're saying you like season 3. Because you
no,
started
I'm
watching
saying that
it.
I
just want to
yeah,
clarify.
Yeah, no, I did not see season 2. No. I've seen, I think 3/4 of season 1. And then for whatever reason, I never had time to catch up. So what I mean
yeah.
is I had to do
well,
research
you do a lot.
And figure it out, watch recaps,
yeah.
ask you questions. But
yeah.
The reason why I was going to say that, I wasn't saying that it was a bad thing. I was just going to say, I think that as long as you know the gist and do that, I think you're fine going into the season. Because, I mean, I was not – yes, there were some questions I had for you, obviously, because I kept writing
yeah.
you.
No, that's fine.
A lot of it
yeah.
was more – it was interesting to find out different pieces. But I saw those first 3 episodes, and I thought they were pretty good. So, yeah, I can't say anything about it, but I like where it's heading so far. And obviously some of it's, you know, story of the week and some of it's mythology, like I think that show normally is. But yeah,
yeah,
I really liked it. And, and I talked to Melissa and Matt today, too. So all that stuff will be going up as episodes come out of all these shows. So,
yeah.
But yeah,
so
but I just wanted to mention it because I liked it, and it starts the first two.
So one of the things that's coming up April, in the first week of April, which I think we're not going to watch, but AJ, did you know that the CW is rebooting Kung Fu?
I did not.
Yes, they have a modern-day version
oh,
of Kung Fu with a female lead.
I wish they'd stop doing this.
Okay. And it's from Greg Berlanti, of course, who is a very prolific kind of a TV producer. And it's about this young, like, you know, it's a woman. It's like a, I guess she's like Chinese-American woman. And she becomes the student who, like, goes to the monastery, studies Kung Fu, comes back to America, becomes like some sort of like, you know, Kung Fu superhero type person, I guess. I mean, I'm familiar with the Keith Carradine version of Kung Fu,
me too.
Which I didn't really watch that much, but that's from like our childhood, right? And then,
yeah.
And then there was, I guess it was called Kung Fu the
Legend,
the Legend
Continues.
Yeah, it was called, right?
Something
yeah.
like that.
And I just yeah. watched, last week, you guys, I watched this amazing documentary about Bruce Lee last week. If you haven't watched Be Water, which is an ESPN documentary, it's incredible. And it actually talked about how Bruce
yeah,
Lee, of course, was really the – you've seen it, AJ? Isn't it amazing?
Yeah.
And it
yeah,
talked about
cool.
how Bruce Lee was really the – you know, Bruce Lee created Kung Fu and was the star in it. And the studios were like, there's no way a Chinese guy can be in Kung Fu. It's got to be a white guy. Like, no Chinese guy can lead a TV series in the 60s. It's got to be a white guy, which was so horrible. And that's how Keith Carradine got the job. So at least we have a Chinese American actress in this. But anyway – yeah, Kung Fu on the CW with a young woman lead. And I just wonder, like, the CW-ish of this show, what that's going to be like, right?
Well, they just rebooted, you know, they rebooted Walker, Texas Ranger with...
yeah.
I did not know that.
Oh, God. Yeah. Oh, good God, I can't think of the actor's name. I hate myself right now. Jared Padalecki. Jared Padalecki.
Oh, Jared
Padalecki. Playing the Chuck
yep,
Norris
yep.
role.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
They're just calling it Walker, right? It's just called Walker.
Yeah, they're just calling it. Yeah. But it's a complete
yeah.
reboot.
Well, and Jared Padalecki is not a, as far as I know, not a big, like a big martial arts guy. Like, Chuck Norris, by the way, had his first
yeah.
screen credit in a Bruce Lee movie. He was a student of Bruce Lee.
Yep. Enter the Dragon.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah. Jared Pell. And actually, Lindsay Morgan is in that also.
Did not know that.
Who was from, she's from The 100, right? Like, we know her
yes.
from The 100.
Raven.
Yeah, she was Raven in The 100. And Mitch Pileggi's in it, Jamie. I assume he plays somebody's father. I think he plays Walker's father.
Like, for some reason, I heard about that a long time ago. And, like, they might have been talking about it a long time ago.
Well, you probably forgot about it because
I heard about that, like, a long time ago. It was, yeah, like, they were talking about it. It's been forever. And then I completely forgot.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I mean, because of the pandemic, Supernatural got pushed back because of the pandemic, which in turn pushed back Walker. So, yeah.
Everything got pushed back.
A whole year went away, yeah.
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 And still no zombie apocalypse. I'm upset.
Mm-hmm. I know, right? Like, I thought if there was a global virus, we'd at least get a zombie apocalypse out of it.
That's mm-hmm. what I was hoping for.
I don't know. I told you guys I watched this movie, and I learned that I can't survive the apocalypse unless I learn how to chop wood. So that's my next skill set I'm going to pick up.
I have no, all right, ladies. I have no qualms knowing that I would not last for more than a couple days. But like we said before, I think AJ had said about his kid. I think you had said about Artie, because I think it was Artie. You said,
Artie'd
that
be
would
fine.
Definitely be me. I'd like die on – okay, then maybe it was Damon. I
no.
can't remember what you said, but because I was saying that
no,
I would
actually,
die on something very simple.
It'd be Alyssa.
Alyssa, okay. I knew you said somebody did. But
Alyssa
yeah,
be the
I'd
first
probably
to
trip over something and fall on my face.
Alyssa
and
would be the
eat
first
me.
To go?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Her clumsy ass.
Yeah.
She'd walk into a walker. She's just very
clumsy. She is very clumsy. Yeah.
And Damon, I'd have to leave Damon behind because he can't shut up for more than 2 seconds. So he'd give away our position. He doesn't go with the flowers.
We'll have Fenola put all of them into like the brief stasis for the next 20 years.
I know you're kidding. I'm going to make my kid look at the flowers. No, I know. I think it's something too zen. Here's that. Like, how horrible is that?
I would duct tape his mouth and put him over my shoulder.
Yeah.
Although that does make me think of a horrible storyline where Rick had that girlfriend and the kid like got her killed. That was like such annoying.
I was
annoying.
Just talking about that yesterday. I went to get my hair done yesterday, and my hairstylist was saying about how she hates zombie shows and she can never watch them. And I was like, oh, so you didn't see on Walking Dead where they had a storyline? There was a hairdresser purely so the actress could get haircuts. And then the hairdresser, my hairstylist goes, oh, did she die? And I'm like, oh, yeah, the zombies totally got her.
Yeah,
but
that
only
was a great
after the main characters
the
all got haircuts. It wasn't a good storyline in the comics,
All been updated.
All right, kids.
What else?
I guess it's time to wrap it up. Go ahead.
I was thinking there was another show coming back on the first. Maybe I was thinking a Manifest. I don't know.
You have to think of Fear the Walking Dead, which comes back maybe not on the first, but right around the first. It's coming back. I don't know when it's coming back.
Soon. Soonish.
It's coming back very
soon.
Yeah, apparently they're having another spinoff series from Fear. It's going to be like another digital series is coming, which I know those tend to be just like a few episodes. But anyway, I'm not sure when Fear the Walking Dead comes back. But
isn't it bad enough for the spinoff of Daryl and Carol?
Here's the
thing. That'll probably might be good.
I think we just have to all understand that AMC is really the Walking Dead channel. And
yes.
Right? And it's really just about April 4th. I'm sorry. It comes back April 4th. I just Googled it.
No, it's April 11th.
No, it's on AMC Plus on April 4th and then on TV April 11th. You're right.
No, AMC Plus doesn't count.
I was going to say, I'm on MDiv.
It doesn't count.
Yeah, it's going to be on AMC Plus on the streamer on April 4th and then on April 11th. But really, AMC is the Walking Dead channel. Morgan's still alive.
Yeah.
Morgan is good Morgan again this season. Like, he's been bad Morgan for a couple seasons, and now he's like, you know, Morgan goes back and forth between being like a badass, and then it's like, I feel so guilty, I'm going to be nice to everyone. I can't kill anyone. I can't even kill walkers. Blah, blah, blah. And then he'll be like, oh, next season he's a badass, and then he goes back to being like a wuss, and then, good Morgan this year. Yeah.
All right, ladies.
All right, the only other thing I think we should say is that for
people
who listen but don't know where to find it, we'll just mention again, if you want to watch Gary's series, to go to Joylyn the series on YouTube, and the pilot's up there for everybody to see.
Yeah.
All right.
Watch
and
it.
We'll talk
we're
to
be
you guys
about.
Next week. Yep. Yep. I will see you
Have
guys next
night,
week.
Have a good night, everyone.
Okay.
Talk
all right,
to
guys.
You later.
Night.
All right.
Okay. Bye. Bye. Bye.